Since 1889, Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service has been a trusted name in the Richland Center area, providing compassionate care and support for families during difficult times. For assistance, call 608-647-4808. Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, trusted by the community for over 135 years.
Any place is all right as long as I can forget I've ever known her.
Johnny Pride on WRCO Radio.
Happy trails.
This is Phil Nee, and I hope all your trails are happy until we talk again.
Later. We meet again.
Have a good one, everyone. We'll talk to you after putting our little records away. We'll be in the studio next hour with Community Conversation. We want to give you a word that you can text in the Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win Multi-State Contest. This hour's keyword is purple. P-U-R-P-L-E, if you didn't know how to spell that. Purple. Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win Contest on WRCO. Download the Civic Media app. Find us, WRCO. You can also text that to 608-647-4155. This hour's keyword is purple. Good luck.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Deadly attack outside a synagogue in Manchester, England. Police say a man drove a car into a crowd of people and then stabbed some of them, killing two, wounding three. Here's ABC's Lama Hassan at the foreign desk.
Paramedics are on the scene helping the wounded. Manchester's mayor saying the immediate danger appears to be over, but also warning members of the public to avoid the area. And this, of course, happening on what is the holiest day in the Jewish calendar, Yom Kippur. An urgent investigation is now underway.
The gunman was shot by police and is believed to have been killed. The federal government is still shut down. The White House says furloughed workers could be fired as soon as this week. Warren Buffett has announced his biggest deal in years with Berkshire Hathaway's $9.7 billion acquisition of Occidental Petroleum's chemical division. OxyChem makes things like chlorine for water treatment facilities. It could be Buffett's last big deal before he hands over the Berkshire Hathaway reins next year. This is ABC News. President Trump's Commerce Secretary is now talking about a past encounter with Jeffrey Epstein.
Howard Lutnick telling a New York Post podcast he believes Epstein got a favorable deal back in 2008 when Epstein pleaded guilty to two state prostitution charges, granting him and any potential co-conspirators immunity from federal prosecution. Lutnick then making this claim.
And what happened in that massage room, I assume, was on video. This guy was the greatest blackmailer ever.
Suggesting without evidence that Epstein may have traded compromising videos of high-profile associates in exchange for leniency.
That's ABC's Morgan Norwood. Now, the Justice Department says there is no credible evidence of that happening. The death toll has now risen to 72 following that strong earthquake in the central Philippines. 360 people were injured. Disaster officials say there have not been any reports of many more missing people. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Are you looking for the perfect Friday night fish dinner? The Phoenix Center and Richland Center has you covered. Every Friday, starting at 4 p.m., they serve up delicious deep-fried or baked fish. Dine in or take it to go. Open every day at 11 a.m., the Phoenix Center is still your local favorite for food, fun, and family time. From mouth-watering pizza to a night of bowling, it's the go-to destination for good times and great meals. Call 649-7469 to order from the Phoenix Center.
We can't change the circumstances or magically erase the pain of loss, but we can listen and serve you with compassion and understanding at a time when compassion and understanding go a long way. I'm Darren Klingeman of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center in Muscadet. Our promise to you is to be patient, considerate, and professional, serving you as you wish to be served. It's been our priority since 1889 at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
Today's WRCO Hometown Weather Watch is brought to you by Schultz Mortgage Team. Call 608-738-8765. Buying a house is easier than you think with less than 20% down.
A high today of 82 degrees with southeast to south winds at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy and mild, a low of 59. Friday, mostly sunny, record heat possible, a high of 88. 62 Friday night, Saturday near 90 with record highs possible again. And Sunday, 84, windy with a slight chance of a shower or thunderstorm by Sunday night.
Do Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis symptoms keep coming back? Tremfya, guselkumab, may help, with rapid remission achieved at 12 weeks and lasting clinical remission at 1 year. Some even saw visible improvement of their intestinal lining at 12 weeks and 1 year. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active Crohn's disease and adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections and liver problems may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Healing is possible with Tremfya. Approximately 3 out of 10 patients were in endoscopic remission at 1 year, based on areas visualized on colonoscopy, which may not represent the deeper bowel layer or entire GI tract. Individual results may vary. Ask your doctor about Tremfya today. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
Have you been meaning to get a quote with Julie Karen State Farm? Maybe need a nudge? Now's the perfect time. State Farm's auto rates have had a rate decrease in the state of Wisconsin. That means more savings for families, farmers, and neighbors across our community without losing the trusted protection and personal service you deserve. It's easy to start a quote at juliekarens.com or call or text the office today. See how much you could save with this new auto rate decrease. Local, reliable, and always here for you in our community. Just like a good neighbor.
During Red Ribbon Week, join millions across the country in celebrating a drug-free life. The Richland Hospital and Clinics, along with Partners for Prevention, supports your commitment to saying no to drugs. Instead, say yes to your dreams, your health, and your community. Whether you're in school, at work, or at home, speak out. Be the influence. Live drug-free.
The calendar brings a change of seasons. So does life. I am Mark Jelenic of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service. We all have a season that we like best and one that is our least favorite. In life, there are also seasons to celebrate and seasons to dread. All of us at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service are committed to serving you during life's difficult seasons so you can look forward to life's brighter days. Our door is always open and your questions are always welcome at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
Over 100 years of serving Southwest Wisconsin, all of us at Jones Chevrolet are honored to continue the tradition. We love to help you choose a new Chevrolet. We love to help with maintenance, repairs, and accessories too. Schedule a service appointment, see our inventory, connect with a sales professional, and get pre-approved for competitive financing at JonesChev.com. Come see the exciting new Chevrolets. Jones Chevrolet, over 100 years of being your Chevy truck headquarters. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
The Morning Show on WRCO FM 100.9 and WRCO.com, featuring real community conversations that matter to our community. The WRCO Morning Show studio is proudly sponsored by Richland Hospital, caring for the health of our community. Scott Industries, enjoy building strong futures. Osborne Stump Removal, clearing the way for what's next. And Sean's Auto Repair, keeping you on the road with service you can trust. On a morning show today, we are honored to have State Senator Sarah Kievsky of the 14th Senate District in to talk about all of the things, concerns, and goings-on in the state of Wisconsin. Good
Hello,
to see you again, Senator.
Hello,
yeah. It's been a little while. Did you have a good summer?
Oh, I'll be honest, I had a rough summer. I got sick for quite a bit of it, which was really unfortunate. Landed me in the hospital for a little bit. Now I'm doing much better, and I have just so appreciated being healthy again. So, you know, honestly, not the greatest summer, but I'm looking forward to the fall now.
Absolutely, and it's beautiful out there. And,
oh, sure.
And you're back to work and going to meetings and conferences and hitting the ground running, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, even though we haven't been in session, I mean, it's still really busy. There's all kinds of things I can do and have been doing. Like you said, I've been going to conferences. I've been touring areas in my district. I've been visiting places that are important to see what's happening, new and innovative ideas. I've been chatting with constituents in listening sessions. And I've been going to committee meetings that we still have or caucus meetings. So yeah, still very busy.
I know recently you were at the State Innovation Exchange Agriculture Conference in the Twin Cities.
Yes.
Can you talk about that and what you took from that?
Yeah, sure. So it was this interesting opportunity to meet with, they gathered, SIX is what it's called, State Innovation Exchange. They brought together 24 state legislators that all have an interest in rural agriculture and the policies. And in particular, the progressive policies that can be helpful for rural ag. So it was all Democrats, interestingly, that were there. And we met, we cover, I think the 24 of us were from at least 7 or 8 different states. And so seeing different things at the local level and talking together about what we're seeing in our states, what our concerns are about our rural livability in general, everything from what's happening with our water supply, what's happening with our small farms and consolidation, the monopolization of big ag and how that's impacting our agricultural land and use, and about the idea of how do we transition farms to the next generation when they're often really expensive and most young people don't have the finances for that, and how do we help them be able to move into the world of agriculture, because we still need many people to live and love that job, but it's really challenging on a financial level. So it was really interesting to be able to be together with these people that just really care about rural America like I do. Being from a small family farm, it just was lovely to get others caring about it too, all across the state, to talk.
What's the talk right now about tariffs? I know there's something in the news today about soybean growers being a little concerned about China not buying from the U.S. and things like that. What are some of the things that you've heard?
A little concerned is a mild way to say it. I think there's great concern that historically China has been a huge purchaser of our soybeans. And based on the tariffs, what they've decided is that they're just not going to buy any from the United States. And so there's a big zero now. And our soybean producers are right now harvesting their soybeans and not necessarily having a place for them to go. And so what we know is that China is now changing their buying to South America, and they are capable of growing soybeans, and they are building up their production levels to replace us. And so while the tariffs are hurting us this season, the concern is we could maybe manage as a farming community a tough year. Right? The problem is that if we ultimately have this tariff issue that is creating a country to go to another country, so China going to South America, for example, and building up those trade relationships, then the next year, we simply, even if the tariffs were gone, those trade relationships are now more solid and ours haven't been. And that changes the trajectory for the next many, many years, even if these tariffs are pulled off. So it has huge implications. And then there's been, $20 million recently sent to Argentina from this government. So it's sort of helping the people that are taking the business away from our local farmers. So it's a very convoluted, confusing, hurtful policy progression lately that I think has dire impact on our farmers, because we also need to now think about what are we going to do next year? What do we plant? And we don't know what's going to happen with these tariffs. We don't know what's going to happen now with these markets. And so there's so much influx, and there's already so much uncertainty as farming anyway, when you don't know about what's going to happen with your weather, you don't know what's going to happen. To have this governmental impact also create so much uncertainty is just, I can't imagine, honestly. The emotional toll is probably being taken on our farmers. And so I worry about that a lot. And I'm hopeful that this gets figured out. I mean, I'm hopeful that they are given help. But again, I'm not sure that that's going to be a solution. That feels like a short-term Band-Aid to something that is a gashing wound right now that was self-created by the tariff policies.
You mentioned the cost of trying to get into farming, too. And the other thing that I had thought of recently, we had talked about shortage of housing. And one of the things, when my wife and I bought our first house in 1988, it cost $25,500. First time, you know, those kind of things.
Yowza.
Yeah, nice. Those things don't exist anymore. And yeah. For somebody that, and I was 24, for somebody that's 24 now, it's very difficult to purchase a home.
Well, I have 24-year-old, 25-year-old, 23-year-old young men in my life. They're my sons. And I can tell you that they are struggling to even pay rent. Two of my boys live together with another friend. Their rent is over, I believe, $800 each. And that is just to live in a reasonable apartment, a three-bedroom that they can, they live in Cottage Grove near their jobs. And so not only is it hard to buy a home, but it's hard to rent right now. And if you are renting, you aren't building any equity with that. And so you don't have then the resource of money, unless you're able to save a lot. You don't have the money to be saved to put on down a down payment. And so right now our young people are facing a really difficult situation with the housing market, and then what that means for their wealth growth potential. If we aren't able to have them start kind of at the younger ages, you know, in their 20s, early 30s, to be able to develop that, I think we're going to have a lot of young people that are going to not be able to reach some of the successes that their parents have. And that is honestly heartbreaking for me with six kids that sees that they might not be able to have some of the advantages that I've had. And that's to no fault of their own. That's the nature, you know. Some people like to, you know, kind of condemn young people these days to, you know, they're lazy. I mean, there's this kind of misperception that can kind of be bounced around a bit. And I think it's really unfair. I see my kids and their friends working hard, being dedicated to their jobs, getting their college degrees, trying to just do what they were always told was going to help them be successful and launch. And it's incredibly difficult right now because prices are so high. So I find it heartbreaking right now. And I think we need to do much more to help improve our economic situation for all people, not just, you know, the people that are getting these high-end tax deductions that were put in the big bill that the federal government passed, there are wealthy, wealthy people receiving tax breaks to make them wealthy, wealthy, wealthier. Mm-hmm. And I find it quite horrifying, frankly.
I was just wondering if there's any bills that have been talked about, like first-time home buyers and some incentives and things like that, that can, you know, maybe help pave the way for young people trying to buy that first house.
Yeah, well, you know, back, oh gosh, many months ago now, I put forth a bill trying to limit hedge funds from being able to purchase single-family homes, thinking that big consolidated organized money shouldn't necessarily have the ability to buy into single family homes. We wanted to make those available for people to buy rather than companies to buy. Unfortunately, that bill, which I think is pretty solid, wasn't even given a hearing. So we're trying, I know, but there are some limitations to what we can do right now when we're not even able to get movement on a bill that at least should have a hearing. You know, if people have some issues with it, absolutely, let me know, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe we could make some modifications. But I'm trying to help where I can. Be innovative, be, you know, thinking of some options. And unfortunately, like I said, my Republican colleagues just won't even have that, get a hearing. So I'm disheartened by that.
State budget providing no increase to general aid to public schools. It was one of the things you wanted to talk about, and the impact of property taxes for our local districts.
Yeah, doggone it. Yeah, you know, I think it's so tricky. You know, I've heard so long, not being in politics, about how people are so frustrated by their property taxes, including me, right? Property tax owner, property taxpayer, I am, and it's been frustrating to see our property taxes be asked to go up with referendum regularly. And I have not fully understood why that was, to be honest. And I just felt the impact and felt frustrated by it. And now coming into the legislature, I still feel the frustration, but now I'm much less oriented to go, what's going on with this school? Why can't they make their payments better somehow? Why are we constantly having to pay more? 'Cause that was kind of the simplistic view of it, frankly, by me even. I just didn't fully understand. And now that I'm in, I'm like, oh my, now I have a fuller picture, right? And with more information, you have more clarity. Well, the information is that our schools, since 2009, they have not gotten an inflationary increase to what they've needed to pay for operational costs. Meaning, for example, they get money from the state, but it is not in relation to the inflationary increases of things like if they need schools have to heat their building. Those prices are rising. They need to pay for insurance for staff. Those costs are rising. They pay for transportation, gas, mechanics. Those costs are rising. And so when schools are given plateau of payment and not given inflationary increases to payment, but still having to pay those inflationary prices, then they're stuck. And so the only place they can go, if they're not getting state general aid increases that are connected to inflation, they need to go to the other bucket of money or option, which is property taxes raising so that they can pay for their operational costs so they can continue to function well or at some level, maybe decently. Maybe well is even a little strong because they're having to cut programs and cut staff and such, you know, because they're not going to maybe be able to pay for all things. So I think understanding that This last budget, so it's a biennial budget, 2 years. This is the first time in a budget that there was not a penny, not a cent, no increase to the general aid money given to schools. Again, general aid is one component. The other is property taxes. So with no money increase given to general aid, schools are essentially forced, I believe intentionally forced, to go to the property tax owners. And now the schools are in this situation where they're having to say, can you please help us again? And people aren't understanding necessarily, you know, again, thinking, well, are you just not doing an economically wise, use of your finances? This isn't about particular schools. Referenda, I have 30 school districts that touch my district, the 14th Senate district. Every single one of them has had to go to referenda at least once in the last number of years. And so we know it's not like a one-off or a two-off where there's like some, you know, financial malfeasance by some schools. It's actually a systemic problem that feels quite intentional when we also have at the same time in our most recent budget, almost $1 billion with a B dollars that are going to go each year. Mind you, there's no general aid increase, but there's going to be $1 billion going to voucher schools from taxpayer money. That is a goal of the Republicans in our legislature right now, is to fund these voucher schools and to have taxpayer money go toward them. I fundamentally have an issue with that. I think the idea of voucher schools is fantastic. I think have them, have options like that available. But to have our tax money then basically go to the school, right? So we have the district, they get the money for all the students that should be going there, but then they have to write a check, essentially I'm simplifying, but they have to write a check for any of the school, the kids that would be in their school district that are going to a voucher school instead, they have to write a check and give that to them off the top. And so that money is not going to our schools, it's going to these voucher, or public schools, pardon me, going to the voucher schools. So we are going to see schools come to the property tax owners again, asking for an operational increase, a referendum to help them pay their operational costs. And I hope everybody keeps in mind that this was deliberately created because the Republicans would not put any general aid increased money in for inflationary cost increases. And I find it infuriating because my taxes too will go up.
Consolidation was also in the news this year. Since the last time we talked, Senator Kiyoski, and I think one of the things they talked about was maybe incentive for some districts, like let's say, you know, maybe this is the only option is to consolidate with another district, money incentive to do that. What's your feeling about consolidation and for some of these rural schools?
Well, obviously, consolidation would probably mostly happen to rural schools, right?
Right.
And so let's just talk about rural schools for a moment. Rural schools are essentially the main employer in our small towns, meaning they are an economic driver for those small towns. So these schools provide jobs and therefore incomes and therefore residents generally that then also purchase from the local businesses, farmers markets, right? And they buy the homes in these small rural areas. So they help sustain rural livability by being there. Public schools do. And so if you take away a public school to save some money, and I'm not suggesting that there might not be some places, a few, that this might be wise, financially wise. But when I talk to individuals that understand the finances behind the potential of consolidation, what I hear is consolidation feels like it might be a solution to the intentional decrease of funding necessary to manage and help our public schools. It isn't because, again, there's poor management of these schools. And so what we're looking at is this dilemma, right? Is if there would be, let's say, a bit of financial gain, although that's even questionable because you still have to transport kids, and that is a cost. If you think about bringing kids in and out of schools, if you have them further away, further apart from their school, right, you're going to have those increased costs. If you, let's say, consolidate two schools and you, so instead of two superintendents, you have one superintendent, right, you still will probably have to have then two or three principals and then four or five vice principals and then go down the line. You don't actually get rid of many people in the administration because you still have the needs to address the issues with all the students and all the curricula and all the classes that you need. And so it's not actually this big of a solution. So you're not saving a ton of money and maybe sometimes not much at all. But what you are doing then is saying that these small towns are unviable anymore. Because if you lose the school there, like I said, you lose so much. And if you're living there and you don't have a school there, I can guarantee you, you're not going to have, you know, a local grocery store. You're not going to have the gas station. You're not going to have any employees that are going to be able to do the small businesses. You're not going to have customers to go to them. You're not going to have good property value anymore because people are going to leave. It's going to become a bit of a ghost town. If we care about our state as the Dairyland, if we care about rural life, if we care about small town living and not, you know, just about the big cities, I love rural life. I grew up in a town of 850 people. I now live in a town of 3,000 people. It's big to me, right? Mm-hmm. In a way. But I live there because I wanted to raise my kids in a small town. And so I'm heartbroken by the idea that people see this plan of saving money by potentially consolidating small schools, and I think it economically, I think it's very, very short-sighted and will have grand implications for the population in our state, and therefore the economic viability of our state as a whole.
I know that, you coming from Cashton, that's your old alma mater. And let's say that they suddenly decided to consolidate with Westby. What a blow that would be for that small town of Cashton, right?
Yeah, the other piece that I would say, and I know this is getting into the feelings, you know, but there is so much sense of community, sense of pride, sense of connection, sense of gathering spaces that give you a place where you belong, with a school and going to the high school football game, let's say, or attending the mock trial or going to, you know, see the theater production. There is a sense of belonging there for the entire community that when we are saying we're having a greater crisis of mental health issues, a sense of disconnection, a sense of isolation and loneliness, this will only precipitate that further. And so then we are thinking about health implications. Then we're thinking about, you know, what does that mean as far as just like the sense of pursuit of happiness in this world, and this idea that we get to live in a world that we also get to enjoy and feel fulfilled by, right? Like, it's not just about finances then, it's about other things that are a little bit less tangible. And so we have to kind of think of that. I know that can't be the primary, but it is a piece that we would lose if we decide the Cashin Eagles are no longer, right? And we now join another school and blend them in some way that loses an identity, loses a sense of belonging, loses connection in a significant way that I think would be really, really painful and sad, and I think have, again, trickle down impacts that I think are important to recognize.
Senator Sarah Kieski, our guest in the morning show, always a good time when she visits, and we'll have a little bit more coming up here on the morning show.
We can't change the circumstances or magically erase the pain of loss, but we can listen and serve you with compassion and understanding at a time when compassion and understanding go a long way. I'm Darren Klingman of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Russian Center in Muscadet. Our promise to you is to be patient, considerate, and professional, serving you as you wish to be served. It's our priority since 1889 at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Paul from Prescription Center. For over 40 years, we have been a trusted member of the health care of our community. We've always been here for everyone. From West Seminary Street, where it all started, to the hospital, and now to Sexsonville Road, we have provided honest advice, low prices, and with the help of many of our friends, a pay-it-forward account to help those that can't afford their medication. We are humbled by the trust we have earned. We have always made every effort to make pharmacy affordable to all. We accept all insurances because you deserve to have your plan honored. The only area pharmacy to take TRICARE and CHAMP VA. What better way to say thank you to those who served? We thank all for their trust. If you want this type of service, let us be your pharmacy of choice.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Are you looking for a meaningful way to give back to your community? Passages is looking for compassionate, motivated volunteers to join our team. We provide men, women, and children survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault with free, confidential services regardless of age, sex, or gender identity. We have a variety of volunteer opportunities available, from yard cleanup, donation sorting and organizing, and fundraising support, to shelter advocacy and survivor support. There are also a couple of larger outdoor projects that would be great for teams. Do you want to share a skill? We're also launching new life skills programming and are seeking volunteers to lead classes such as yoga, sewing, crocheting, cooking, meditation, grounding exercises, and more. Whether you're interested in direct client support or behind-the-scenes help, there's a place for you at Passages. Did you know that every hour you volunteer helps Passages meet its grant match? Learn more by visiting our website at passagesrc.com and click on the I Want to Help tab. There you will find a list of opportunities and a volunteer application. Join us in making a difference, one life, one step at a time.
If you're looking for a workplace that truly cares about you and your future, at Rockwell Automation in Richland Center, it's more than just a job. It's a career with purpose. At Rockwell, people come first. You'll find competitive pay, great benefits, and real opportunities to grow in a positive, team-driven environment where your work truly matters. From supporting innovation on the job to volunteering in the community, Rockwell is proud to stand behind its employees and give back to Richland Center every step of the way. Whether you're starting your career or looking for a fresh start, Rockwell Automation is a great place to work and a great neighbor to have. Now hiring in Richland Center. Simply visit rockwellautomation.com to learn more and apply today.
Lost your edge? Affordable Sharpening in Richland Center sharpens mower and chainsaw blades, all knives and scissors, including hunting knives. I'm open Thursday through Saturday, noon to 4, at 130 South Central Avenue, next to Belltone. Find me on Facebook at Affordable Sharpening or call 608-604-0230.
J.
John Deere is putting in work and putting up highlights.
Oh man, look at those passes. Tillage, planting, harvesting.
3 years in and these pre-owned machines are still at the top of their game. We're talking reliability, performance, and long-term potential.
And get this, these veteran machines can pick up the latest precision tech with ease.
You know it, and fans ready to add John Deere certified pre-owned equipment and more options to their lineup can shop at machinefinder.com.
Booyah!
Couldn't have. Don't touch that dial. You are tuned into Whiffle's Country WYFF, the station that's been family-owned and fiercely independent for almost 80 years. No nonsense, just common sense and chart-topping corn hybrids coming to farm gates all over the Central Corn Belt. Stay tuned for more Whiffle's Country hits like She Thinks My Kernel's Sexy, I Got 99 Problems But Yield Ain't One, and Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Sell Soybeans. Thanks for listening, and remember to keep it independent with Whiffle's Hybrids.
The Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest continues this hour on WRCO, and our word this hour for you to text in is purple, P-U-R-P-L-E. So make sure you do that. Download the Civic Media app, find WRCO, and get that done. You have until 10 today to get that word into us, purple. Joining us is Senator Sarah Kieski. I haven't heard your name bandied about in terms of running for governor yet.
Oh, gosh, you will never hear my name bandied about for running for governor. Nope, I'm fine where I am, and I do not aspire to any such thing. And I feel for every single person putting their hat in that ring because, boy, oh, boy, is that going to be a challenging race and a challenging job going forward, just given everything that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of things to talk about. We talked in the break a little bit about our local community forum that we recently had, and one of the topics was net new construction, which is very, very a hot topic here in Richland Center. Any comments on that, Senator Kieski?
Yeah, well, you know, some of the way to increase revenue is tied to net new construction for our municipalities, which in some ways makes sense and has its value. But I think, again, for some rural small communities, either that can't really grow, and Richland Center is one of those that struggles to grow because of the location, kind of the way that your city is designed and where it's at topographically. And similar to Lodi, we have a hard time growing. We're kind of in this like little valley. And in some ways, growth shouldn't always be the barometer of how you get help, financial help, because that means you're always having to push toward growth. And some of us that live in small towns, we don't necessarily want to grow bigger. And so if that's the incentive, it kind of precludes financial investments in small towns that can be really beneficial because they're not growing in the way that the financial formula has sort of implicated it must do, if that makes sense. And so I find it frustrating. Again, one of the formula things that are in here that I'm learning about that just feels a little counterintuitive in some ways, where I'm hoping that there's some recognition of that and some ways to change that, that honor areas where growth is not either a viable option or necessarily promoted or desired option.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to be meeting with Mayor Todd, I believe, somewhere along the line to talk about that.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah. Mayor Todd and I are meeting today. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully he sees that on his schedule and is as delighted as I am to chat, because I'm really eager to talk to him again about what's been happening here locally and learn the lay of the land and the current challenges and struggles.
Certainly concerning in the news, all the violence that's been going on. I wanted to ask you about your opinion about safety at the state capitol in the wake of all the recent violence. Do you feel that it's safe there while you're in session?
Well, oh, goodness. You know, I'm not somebody that, like, is a fearful person in general. I don't know. I grew up on a farm and we never locked our doors and we always kept our keys in the ignition. I mean, I just lived in a way that we trusted. And I still have a real, maybe naive, but hopeful idea of humanity. And so I don't worry a ton, just in general. But when the Minnesota legislator, Melissa Hortman, and her husband, and when they were killed recently in an assassination that happened because of their political roles, and when there was a list of politicians this person was potentially targeting, and it had some of my colleagues' names on it and the names of their pets and their addresses and their children's names, that felt very close to home and pretty scary, I'll be honest. My husband, I would say, he takes a very serious approach to the protection of me and our kids. And he was really, tilted off, I guess, off kilter after that one, finding out about that. And so I would say political violence right now is scary. It feels like it's rampant. And it feels like it's being stoked when I'm being called by the most powerful person in our government right now, the president calling someone like me a left-wing lunatic that is the enemy within. Gosh, I can't tell you how, like, I feel heartbroken and a bit scared. I try not to live there. I try not to think about it much. But we also have an open Capitol where people can bring guns in if you have a concealed carry permit. There's no, metal detectors, that kind of thing. Again, I try not to think about it much, but that's not very comfortable. So I don't know. I guess I just live with the reality of what it is right now, but I really hope that people recognize the importance of some better gun safety reform in our state and recognize how that's so different than taking away guns, because I don't believe in that. I think that gun use and being able to hunt and being able to do target practice and, you know, pigeon clay shooting, which I did recently, which was really fun. I think there's a place for that, and that's wonderful. But I think there's a difference, and I think, you know, most people, if you look at the numbers, most people agree with some regulations to make sure we're more safe with guns, and I'd like to see some serious conversation that's bipartisan in that area. So that we take it seriously and so that we can do our jobs in a way that give us the right to have differences of opinion, strong feelings about things that maybe people don't agree with, but we're not at risk of losing our lives because of what we believe, what we value, and what we do.
Mm-hmm. I can't fathom, you know, somebody you don't agree with, maybe they're on the other side of the aisle or whatever, but I can't fathom hating somebody that much that you would, you know, do an act of violence against them.
Well, I can't either, but I think there's a lot of propaganda that goes on, right? I think when you are told that the other side, I mean, I'll use some of the words that are used against me as a Democrat, that I'm evil, that I'm morally bankrupt, that I don't care about children. I think some people, especially if they're maybe not in an emotionally healthy place, they can see that as I'm a danger, right? And so in some ways, like, I can't see it, but I can, right? And that's why it's so important to make sure, A, there's not access to guns, to people that are unstable, or to have opportunities to have time frames where you can't just get a gun the minute you want a gun, right? Or to have background checks. I mean, those kinds of things make sense so that somebody that might be compelled in an emotional state, not a logical state, are doing some kind of damage. But I also think it's problematic. It's divisive and it's, I don't even know the right word, horrid, horrific, diabolical, I don't know. But to be calling someone like me these terrible words that define me as somebody that doesn't have values or that has negative desires for other people. I've been a mental health therapist my whole life. I have six kids. I'm not doing this job because I want to hurt people. I'm doing this job because I care deeply. And to be villainized and to be threatened and to be called names that just degrade me as a human, there's something fundamentally wrong with our country when people at the highest levels are doing this with no repercussions and are allowing it to happen and are infiltrating their departments with people that are contributing to this, like the vice president, like the Department of War secretary. I'm sickened by it.
I can't imagine why anybody would want to run for political office, either side, right now. I mean, you know.
You know, it's funny because somebody asked me when I was with these other colleagues at the Six convention we talked about at the very beginning. Somebody was asking me how I like it, and we were talking, and I said, "How do you like it?" And she's a legislator in Minnesota, and she said, "You know, I must be a masochist because I really love it." And I thought to myself, that's kind of a funny answer, but maybe true. Like, I feel like I wouldn't like this job if it was a typical time, which sounds really weird, but I think the minutiae of politics would be very boring for me as a person. I'm not sure that, like, these little squabbles would be something that I would typically get into. The reason I entered politics was because I was asked to run. And I was asked to run because people believed that I had the convictions and the values and the internal fortitude to fight for things that I believe in, that they could see in me because of things that I had done. And I know that to be true of myself too. And this feels like the most important time to fight against inhumanity, to fight against corporate greed, to fight against the repeal of rights, to fight against the things that I've really in my life have enjoyed and kind of assumed were American, these democratic rights. And so I don't know that I would even have considered it unless it was at such a pivotal time. And so I love my job because I feel like it's so damn important right now. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else, truly.
I can see your conviction, and I know one of the things you told me the first time you were here, you had just taken over, is you're not worrying about whether you get elected again, right?
You know, if things are going well in our world, and I'm not needed again, I'll go back to doing what I was doing, right? I love to volunteer. I love to knit. I love to kayak. I love to do my private practice. And I'll get to, and I love to go watch my kids in their musical performances and in their volleyball games, right? I'm giving up a lot of that right now for this job. And I'm willing to do that. And my family is willing to endure the sacrifice of that too. But by no means do I need this job. I want this job right now because I feel like I'm a person that has a voice for rural America that might be different than what has typically presented or represented rural America. And I wanna be able to maybe give some new thoughts, new ideas, new perspective. But if people decide, A, they don't want to vote for me and they don't think I'm doing a good job, then please, you know, I shouldn't be here because I should be doing a good job. I should be showing you that what I say is what I mean and I'm doing those things. But this job is not for me. I never aspired to be a politician. Sometimes, like I said, it's a scary place now. So, you know, feeling safe at my home, you know, again, would be, you know, quite nice. But I hope that if in 4 years, well, I guess it's more like three now, that if we're still in a situation where we need people like me that are willing to pull it, you know, really kind of all on the line to fight hard. I hope that I'm still willing to run. And I hope that I'm reelected so that I can continue to do this important work.
We appreciate you taking the time to come and talk to us, and we'll have you back again real soon.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Sarah Kieski joining us, representing the 14th Senate District on today's morning show.
Do Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis symptoms keep coming back? Tremfya, guselkumab, may help, with rapid remission achieved at 12 weeks and lasting clinical remission at 1 year. Some even saw visible improvement of their intestinal lining at 12 weeks and 1 year. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active Crohn's disease and adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections and liver problems may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Healing is possible with Tremfya. Approximately 3 out of 10 patients were in endoscopic remission at 1 year, based on areas visualized on colonoscopy, which may not represent the deeper bowel layer or entire GI tract. Individual results may vary. Ask your doctor about Tremfya today. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
If you're looking for a workplace that truly cares, at Rockwell Automation in Richland Center, it's more than just a job. It's a career with purpose. They put people first, offering great benefits, growth opportunities, and a positive, supportive environment. Rockwell is proud to stand behind its employees and support the Richland Center community every step of the way. Rockwell Automation, a great place to work, a great neighbor to have. Now hiring. Learn more today at RockwellAutomation.com.
Keeping your vehicle running at its best is easy with GM Certified Service from Jones Chevrolet. From oil changes to tires to brakes and multi-point inspections, Jones Chevrolet has the expertise, technology, and convenient hours to take good care of your vehicle. For the very best GM Certified Service, make an appointment soon by calling 647-3788 or stopping at Jones Chevrolet, Highway 14 East, Richland Center, or visit JonesChev.com.
Looking for a career where tradition meets opportunity? Join the legacy at Scott Industries, a proud family-owned business celebrating 75 years. They're expanding and hiring dedicated team members. No experience necessary. Just bring your enthusiasm. Enjoy competitive wages, benefits, and a $3 per hour night shift bonus. Apply in person Monday through Friday, 9 to 3 at 810 East Nebraska Street in Muscatine, or call 739-3171 to learn more. Scott Industries, a profit-sharing company where you can grow your career.
Landowners, your timber property is a valuable asset. Contact Meister Log and Lumber Company to help you manage that asset. Rely on Meister Log and Lumber Company to help you manage your property's timber value for now and years to come. They've been buying logs and standing timber in Southwest Wisconsin since 1936. Meister's Forest Management staff will help you meet your timber's potential. Give professional timber manager Toby Witkowski a call at Meister Log and Lumber, 608-434-4413.
Boscobel is Wisconsin's premier destination for outdoor adventure. The Boscobel Chamber of Commerce looks forward to your visit. Enjoy a fun movie experience, the Blaine Theater, with delicious snacks and budget-friendly $5 admission per person. Visit statetheaters.com and click on Blaine Theater for details. Rooney & Associates is your trusted American family insurance provider in Boscobel. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly with Rooney & Associates and American Family Insurance. And looking for eye-catching signs, custom shirts, or banners? Simply Country Signs and Designs has it all, including professional vehicle lettering. Call 485-3776 and let's get started.
Got stumps? Call Titus Osborne today for a free estimate. With over 15 years of professional stump grinding and removal experience, Titus is insured and ready to handle your project. Don't let those stumps linger. Get the removal scheduled. Customer satisfaction is a must, and Titus is committed to providing fast, reliable, no-hassle service. Call 608-604-7757 now for all your stump removal needs. 604-7757. Titus Osborne, your go-to expert for stump removal.
The fall season is here. Time to think about getting your car ready for winter. When was the last time you had your coolant checked or flushed, got a tune-up, or checked your tires or alignment? Hi, this is Sean from Sean's Auto Repair and Performance. Stop and see us for all your fall service needs. Whether it's cars, trucks, or SUVs, you'll get courteous, quality, professional service for imports and domestics. Call 608-649-